Welcome to Craft Advice, a podcast to help investors tackle the more complex area of their personal and business finances. Join Jack and Sean as we discuss everything from investing to retirement and everything in between.
No worries.
Yeah.
But welcome back, everybody. Craft Advice, Jack and Sean here. It's been a little bit. We've taken a slight hiatus, some summer vacations sprinkled in with a little dash of COVID.
Mm-hmm. Nice, comfortable dash of COVID. If you hear my baritone today, that's exactly what that is.
You are a melodious bear. All right. So what do we got on the agenda today?
Well, we're going to start with what you're drinking. Mine's pretty boring. I'm drinking water. I do have COVID, so that's my story. But we're going to talk a little bit about, I know, real lame. China reopened today.
Yep.
That's something we want to talk about. We want to talk about in a quarterly fund rebalancing. I think that's there's a big, at least a track kind of from, I think it was like the 16th. So basically over 2 weeks since last time we recorded.
Yep.
Like the NASDAQ's up like 10 or 12%. S&P hit a nice little rebound. So we want to talk about quarterly rebalancing, what's causing that. We might touch on the crypto kid. Sam Bankman-Fried may or may not buy Robinhood. And then what else you want to talk about?
We can talk about housing. Just kind of the overall state. Seems like things are cooling a bit.
Housing
not
it
as
is.
Much as, not as much as a lot of people were expecting, myself included, because we did get a nice positive pop here from the May numbers. But yeah, we can touch on the overall state of the housing market, interest rates, et cetera.
Yep. Nice. Well, what are you drinking since you're drinking alone right now?
Since I'm drinking alone before noon. Southern Swells got a nice little in a galaxy really close by. Solid little Citra IPA.
Crack that bad boy up.
Whoop.
All right.
Righty. So China's opening back up.
Yeah. I think this is one of those things that I don't know if we know how this is going to play out.
Yeah.
I think you kind of have a double-edged sword here because part of the reason gas prices have been where they're at is, you know, you have this whole Russian debacle and now you have the entire country or large portions of China that were completely locked down, not using it.
Yep.
That's going to open back up. So it's probably going to hurt the energy grid, but you haven't had people working. You haven't had people really consuming over there. They haven't really, you know, their equivalent of consumer spending has basically been dead.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw that at least early in the market, it's not doing it right now, but early in the market was starting to pop when they announced, hey, China's going to open up. I think Asian markets are actually positive on the day, but interesting news. I don't know why they closed down into this wave of COVID seems to be hitting everyone over here. Are they trying to preemptively do that? I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah, I believe it's a preventative policy. So once they start getting, and I know Australia was doing this for a while too, but basically once they start getting a couple here, a couple there, they see the trend, they shut it all down. And that's been their policy. You know, they call it the zero COVID policy. And that's what their objective has been since the start. I think you bring up a good point. I think there's going to be pros and cons to this opening up, right? We haven't had their economy contributing in any kind of meaningful way to global growth for virtually all of 22, probably half of 21. So if we can really start to get them back into, getting kind of that pro growth mode, it would be better for the global economy. It would be better for our economy. It would ideally, in theory, ease supply chain concerns, right? Because you've got more people reporting for work because they're running that right now, very, very minimal capacity. So I think it would help alleviate some supply chain issues, which are contributing to inflation. Obviously, I don't believe it's the main driver of inflation, but I think a portion of that 8%+ can be contributed or attributed to what's going on in China. So
I got a good one for you.
Helpful. Yeah.
So on the year,
mm-hmm.
the Crane shares China Internet ETF, which basically tracks the internet IT telecom companies of China, is only down 8%.
Okay.
U.S. For stocks, sure. QQQ,
yep.
kind of tech weighted, down almost 30. So
yeah,
I know it got killed if you go back a year and when China started enforcing all these policies, it's still way down, but you're starting to see it hold up pretty good in this volatile market. So maybe a bottom was hit with all that concern in the last, I don't know, 12 months or so.
Yeah.
It was before this market crash that the Chinese stocks fell off, but now they're maybe opening back up. You're seeing the markets start to favor Chinese tech stocks. I don't even know when the last time we talked about Chinese tech stocks was.
It's been a while, but yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that we haven't touched on yet is that it's not just the COVID stuff, right? It's the fact that they had some heavy regulatory, policies that were passed that really were taken in a negative way. And it was specifically targeting a lot of Chinese tech companies. It almost seems as if the government felt that Chinese tech was getting a little too big for their britches. And so they wanted to rein them back in and throw some of these arbitrary policies out there. And that spooked the market. They're basically like, you know, hey, let's not forget this is still a communist country. They still control everything. And if they want to shut something down because they don't like the way it's being run or the message that it's putting out there, they're going to do so. And they've got the power and the will to do so. And that was one of the big things. And when you look at a lot of professionals are staying away from Chinese tech for the time being. But like you said, eventually everything has a value. And it seems as if their bottom may have been reached, because it is definitely holding up far better than ours is, you know, our tech sector is this year.
Yeah.
But they also lost like 70% last year.
I mean, they got destroyed last year. Like, not even like lightly destroyed, like murder. I mean, there were some companies that were down 70, 89. I mean, granted, that's exactly what happened to our stocks this time. This was more of a rebalancing out of that sector, where this is more of the government's going to shut or take over. Like, I think it's Didi, the ride sharing company, is moving back all the way to China.
Yeah.
They're like, a lot of them are allowing it to list.
Yeah, a lot of them are. Right? So they're making a push, because eventually if China is going to not necessarily take over, right? But if they want to be on par with the United States, they need to make the Hong Kong exchange, the Hang Seng, a lot more competitive. And so instead of having a lot of their best of breed tech companies come to the, you know, IPO in the States, they're trying to coerce them into IPOing and listing and basically trading on their exchanges. And in some cases, solely trading on their exchanges. So.
Well, yeah, they want the money too that comes with it. There's no reason you wouldn't want to have money coming from listing. Yeah. So makes sense.
Why wouldn't they want to do that? I mean, that's completely understandable. But at the end of the day, the market is so much more built out, fleshed out, developed, and transparent, et cetera. Here, the market, you know, that's the big push from a lot of these companies to IPO here because of the trust level. But like you said, it's something that they're going to continue to push for, because why wouldn't they?
Yep.
It's going to benefit them as a country, as an economy. They're going to continue to try to draw those companies back stateside.
Yep. Nice. All right. Quarterly rebalancing. Sounds boring.
It's very boring. But, you know, as a part of our crafty advice, we always like to recommend, good behaviors from an investing perspective. One of those being obviously rebalancing. So what rebalancing is for the audience out there is when you have a portfolio, let's say it's 70% stocks, 30% bonds and cash. And, you know, if you left it onto itself, most of the time your stocks are going to outperform your conservative piece, which is the bonds and cash. So in order to realign and maintain a certain level of risk in your portfolio, you're going to sell those stocks that are doing well and take the proceeds and rebalance it back into the bond side, that conservative side of your portfolio. Again, just quick math there. Let's say the market runs up and that's 70% and now is 75%. And that bond cash portion that was 30 is now 25. So now you're out of alignment, so to speak. Rebalancing is essentially shaving off that 5% on the stock side, taking those proceeds and rebalancing back into the bond and cash side. And now what happens is you'll see certain milestones, you know, end of the quarter, end of the year, end of the 6 months, where you'll have institutional investors, you know, professional money managers that are mandated or required to do these types of rebalancing trades, regardless of what's going on in the market. So if you've got a scenario like we have now, where, you know, the first 6 months have been on par for one of the worst 6 month stretches in the last 100 years, what we're seeing is professional investors essentially rebalance their portfolios, right? And that's causing the same thing that happened in March at the end of the first quarter is the same thing that's happening in June at the end of the second quarter. We're seeing big run-ups in, you know, basically a 2 week period and a lot of the most beat up areas of the market. We point this out to say that, you know, proceed with caution, because what happened the last time is that the 2 to 3 weeks following the end of the quarter, you saw a lot of that stuff sell back off. So that's really why we want to bring it up, because we don't want you guys out there to get kind of head faked. And this may be a bottoming. This may be the start of another rally. Who knows?
Who knows?
We're not fortune tellers, but what I will say is there hasn't been a major shift in the economic landscape. It's not like inflation's gotten much better. Housing's starting to get worse. We'll talk about that in a little bit. You know, consumer sentiment, consumer spending, all these areas are getting a little bit shaky. So it's not like in Fed policy has not changed. If anything, it's gotten a little bit more aggressive. So there's not a lot of reasoning to be overly optimistic about equities other than the fact that they've sold off big. And that's why we believe it's more of a end of quarter rebalancing phenomenon that we're seeing.
Yeah, the other thing to think about too is if you take a fund like Vanguard's total stock market, it's one of the largest ETFs, has like $250 billion in the fund. You know, a lot of investors are doing a simple portfolio. You buy that in the total bond market index and just forget about it.
Yep.
There's a lot of cases. JP Morgan did an analysis that was suggesting with stocks down north of 20% for the year, just rebalancing back to target could boost the stock returns by about 7%, just because think about pensions. So California has a giant teachers and public employees retirement, Florida, same thing. They have to keep a target on their allocation. When stocks fall, they can't just say, oh, now everyone's more conservative. So a little adjustment like that could add a significant number of inflows. You know, it's not happening right now, but normally the first week of July, as the quarter closes, you'll see a lot of those rebalances go through. So you might see a short-term pop. You don't know if it's going to be a bottom, to Sean's point, or if it's just going to continue into, you know, the kind of declines we've had over the last couple of months.
Yeah. I mean, and then if you look at it again, what's actually happened, right? Kind of what's under the hood, other than, hey, the valuations have gotten beat up. And relatively speaking, they were so stretched, right? When we were at the peak of things back in last November, about 9 months ago, 8-9 months ago, the market itself was so expensive relative to traditional metrics that it had to come down. And it's almost like from November through Q1, it came down to semi-normal levels, still a little elevated, but now it's coming back to where it's, you know, the point is it hasn't even gotten to the oversold period. It's just oversold relative to where it was 8-9 months, you know, previous record highs. But there's still plenty of pain that could potentially be out there, especially depending on how long the Fed continues down the tightening path.
Yep. Yep. So definitely going to happen. Let's go next to your best friend, the Lord of Crypto, which used to be Michael Saylor.
The Lord of Crypto.
Used to be Michael Saylor, but he's running on bankruptcy.
No. Michael's fine. Big Mike's all right.
Big, I want to know who the bank is that's lending that guy money.
Silvergate.
Is it really?
Yeah, Silvergate. Yeah, and they took – so he's collateralized at a very low – so most of what they purchased was cash that the business had, and they've used cash from the business. So it's not like they've taken on a lot of leverage or debt to get the coins that they have. The overwhelming majority of it was purchased through just basically treasury management within the company. But they did do a $200 million purchase using $1 billion worth of Bitcoin leverage at the time, which obviously is no longer a billion. But he is, according to him, obviously, I mean, take everything with a grain of salt. But according to him, they wouldn't be in any kind of serious margin call or financial situation unless Bitcoin reached sub $3,000 a coin. So he's, and that's what he's saying. Obviously, again, yeah, who knows the validity of that? Yeah, we don't know all the inner workings of their deals behind the scenes, but that is what he is saying. But yeah, so as far as this goes, I think this is a really interesting move. I mean, FTX is a very, very interesting platform. I mean, it's exploding, and what you're seeing now is, you know, and we talked about this before, it just not necessarily FTX, but so Sam owns FTX, started it, and it's one of the largest crypto and Forex trading platforms out there. With respect to Robinhood, what you could be seeing is a combination of crypto stocks and somebody who's looking to get a very sleek and a very good interactive platform that basically can do everything under one roof.
How is this fucking possible?
You're muted, buddy.
Did I just tell that whole story with my mic?
I'm so happy that that wasn't my fault. You have
this is COVID
no
break,
idea.
Sean.
You
this
have no break. Idea how pumped I am that that was your fuck up and not mine. Score. 100-1, but yeah, still get that one. I feel like the little giants right now.
Yeah,
there's always one.
Yep. All right. So back to my muted.
You're gonna have to edit that. You went on this long story, and I didn't realize it until I looked in the bottom right hand corner of your screen. I was like, oh shit, Jack's muted.
Oh, that's okay. We'll just we'll leave this in. No editing. Anyways, so they had at the Sone conference, they did a virtual introduction with the CEO of Stripe. And Sam Bankman-Fried, and they were talking about his business because everyone in crypto, like Binance, Crypto.com, Coinbase, they're just laying off thousands of people, 18%, 20%.
Yep.
And he said he's probably going to be hiring. And they're like, well, how are you hiring? He's like, well, I only have 300 employees.
Yeah.
And they're like, how many of them are developers? He's like, 29. He's like, you have 29 people. And Sam Bankman-Fried's point was, it's not efficient if we hire more people to build the product. We need to get more out of our existing base. So their salary cost is way down. So they've been really profitable, supposedly. So maybe that's why he's dabbling into these Robinhood discussions. I know it seems like he said no, but I think a lot of this discussion seems plausible. I mean, he's been trying to get into stock trading through FTX for a while, and he probably is going to have a hard time getting through regulation. So if he can buy his way through, I don't know. It makes sense. He does have every celebrity endorsement where Coinbase, Crypto.com has Matt Damon, which I think was the top of the market. So if you followed Matt Damon into the fold, you got screwed there.
Yeah. No, I think he's also just possibly throwing off some of the, some of the heat. Never take anything that they say with a grain of salt. They're like, oh, the rumors are that you're buying it. Oh, no, we're not buying it. And then it's like a week later, like, okay, we're buying it. So, I don't necessarily take what he is saying directly, with a lot of weight, but I do believe the marriage makes sense, right? The synergies make sense. What they do and what they do make a lot of sense. And the other thing is that Robinhood is in a little bit of a vulnerable financial situation, to say the least, right? I mean, yep. What are they down from their top?
75.
Easily, right? And it's something. So their all-time high, 75 was kind, Jack. They were down at 1.91. And now they're back up to only being down 87 from the all-time high last year. Very exciting stuff. So, yeah, he's getting if he does buy them, he's going to get a really good deal on it. And I think he recognizes that it's a brand that's growing. It's a brand that's going to continue to bring back users. They've got a very interactive platform. And so they're going to try to mix in. We talked about this before. I mean, somebody was going to buy Robinhood. Robinhood is the easy platform out there that some bigger fish is going to basically say, instead of us trying to rebrand and build something that can go after Gen Z and millennials, we're just going to go out and buy Robinhood.
Yep.
And that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Just didn't realize it was coming from the mad scientist. Because that guy's hair is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone is going to go that route. I mean, we thought for a while it was going to be a Fidelity or Schwab, but I think this makes more sense. This whole industry needs consolidation, the whole crypto industry. And so if one of them tucks into the actual capital markets, makes sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think and then FTX has just had a tremendous amount of success. A lot of that has to do with the fact that they have basically no debt and extremely low overhead. I mean, what are they? I think their most recent valuation was like $30 billion or something.
Yep.
Yeah, exciting stuff. But no, I think consolidation is going to help. Consolidation and, unfortunately, regulatory framework is going to help the whole crypto space. And I think we'll slowly see that over the next 2-3 years.
Yep.
Bit by bit. Gary Gensler even came out and said that Bitcoin is the only crypto that I would recognize as a commodity. But a lot of people took that as his tacit acknowledgement that Bitcoin is a commodity, not a security. And so it's unlikely the SEC is going to be coming down very hard on Bitcoin as a security.
Yep. You want to talk real estate?
More positives, Jack. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk real estate.
Right. This is your topic. What do you think on the real estate side?
Well, I mean, prices are going up. Demand's going down. We just had some numbers come out this morning. Let me see here. Let me get it pulled up. So prices rose 20.4% nationally year over year in April.
Yep.
Woo. April was probably the last. I'd love to see what that number looks like coming in for May and definitely for June, because it seems like towards the end of May and into June is really when it seems like prices are starting to slow down a bit. But, I mean, if you take Tampa is one of the most egregious markets in the country right now. Tampa prices were up a stunning 35.8% year over year. Isn't that something?
I'm blaming it on Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. Damn it, Tom. You handsome bastard.
You know, what I'm interested to see is what's slowing the market right now is the mortgage rate that literally at the beginning of the year was somewhere around 3.2. Now it's 5.8. We'll get another print on Thursday. So probably Friday, we'll get an update on what the updated price is. But if the 30-year mortgage rate keeps pushing up, this thing's just going to grind to a halt. Even talking to mortgage brokers, all that has basically just hit the wall and stopped people selling houses. It's basically cash buyers are the only people coming to the door, or people have to move. But this is a scenario, if you're buying into this market, if you have to, I mean, I would be comfortable saying you're going to see a rebalance at some point in the next, or a refinance rather. You're going to need to refinance probably some point in the next 24 to 36 months. But it's still a tough market.
Yeah. But I mean, so there were some that were expecting sales to be down, but we actually did see a positive positive number on that front yesterday, I believe, was 0.7% versus expectations of being down negative 0.4. So it was a good swing. Good swing there. Prices are going up. Sales are still there. They're not slowing as quickly as some expected. But I think we're going to start seeing that continuously slowly grind to a halt. Slowly, slow, because like you said, you've got a scenario where prices are going up and you've got a scenario where rates are going up. So if you're out there buying a, let's just say a $300,000 home or a $500,000 home, whatever, what you could buy for $300,000 is getting smaller and smaller as the price of homes goes up. And then that monthly payment is getting squeezed tighter and tighter with those rates. I mean, they peaked. Oh, yeah. What was it? The peak was closer to 6.5 before they came down. It was like 6.4, 6.5. And then
now 5.8 was the average rate. So the average rate is still lower. But I heard a client that their son got into a 30-year at 7% because his credit wasn't great. And that was the only option he had. So sucks at times, but that's how it goes.
I mean, at the end of the day, it is what it is. And like you said, it's, these rates won't be here forever. I don't think we're ever going to see what we saw over the previous 12 years, definitely over the previous 24 months, right? Those, at one point, you could have bought points and got something sub 2%.
Yeah. Some one nines were out there.
There were some one nines out there for a little while. I mean, it was wild, wild stuff that we will likely not ever see again. But I do think what we're going to have is a scenario where, the Fed will continue to raise rates. Inflation will continue to, slowly grind to a slowing pace. And then eventually what you're going to see is the Fed pivot and they're going to change and they're going to lower rates, just like how the Fed always raises and lowers rates in cycles. And eventually they'll lower rates. But where mortgage rates peak before they start lowering is anybody's guess. But it is definitely going to be a much more costly environment to buy a home for the foreseeable future.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But not a bad place to be an investor.
Very true. Got a house. You're doing good. You're renting. Sorry. See you in a couple of years.
Yeah.
There will always be time though. So don't worry about rushing into it. There will be time to get back in. It just might be a while.
Oh, Melissa wants to buy a house tomorrow.
There you go.
We went to a place, and this is the other, this is an anecdotal story, but so we went to see this home in Atlantic Beach, and it was nice, 3,000 square foot, beautiful, done a ton of renovations to it. I mean, it was, awesome. Great location. Everything was perfect about it. But, it was 1.3, I believe, is what they were asking for it. And it had two open houses. A week later, had another open house. And then I just got another email because we're still getting information about this. And so they're about to have another fourth open house. And they have not gotten any offers that they are, obviously, that the sellers are really comfortable with. Whereas if they would have sold that house in April, it would have probably gone for over asking and maybe gone to a cash buyer. I mean, things were still flying off the shelf in April. Now, late June, this thing's just sitting here.
Yeah. I mean, you're really... You could very easily get screwed had you approached the market at the wrong month, which is absurd. But
it's just that's wild. But that is where we are.
Yeah,
things are moving fast, Jack. Things are moving fast.
They're moving real fast. Well, any final thoughts for everybody?
No, just stay nimble. Don't be too committed. And what I would say is definitely don't get faked out by this market. I think a lot of what we're seeing right now is temporary relief rallies. Quarter end type stuff. So if you have the ability to take, trim a little bit, I would do so. Try to raise a little cash, and then just, again, stay nimble.
Very good. All right. Well, let's leave it there. Again, like, subscribe, send us emails, whatever you guys want to do. Craft-advice.com. We got to get rid of that dash. It's really getting annoying.
Craft-dash advice.
All right. Well, on that, cheers, Sean. Here's some hydration water.
Oh, man, that water looks delicious.
I know. It's terrible. All right. Adios, everybody.
Feel better. Adios.
Jack and Sean work for Cenge Advisory Group, a registered investment advisory firm. All discussions between Jack and Sean or any podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Cenge Advisory Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Clients of Cenge Advisory Group may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.